Okay, so let's restart and summarize a little bit, couple of things we saw last time. I'll be briefer today than I was yesterday because today we are moving into a slightly new subject. But although I think we covered all the physics, one thing that maybe it's worth doing is putting some words, some jargon into what we have seen yesterday, because you will encounter this kind of jargon in the future. So even though physics-wise, I think we understood things, we start with a microscopic model, we start zooming out and seeing what happens at large distances, it's useful to put some fancy words to it, so let's do it. We are not adding any physics, but let's recap what we did. So we start with a microscopic model where there is some interaction between spin I and spin I plus 1, and there is some magnetic field. So those parameters here, these couplings here, we would call them UV, ultraviolet for short distance, or if you want, bare couplings. Right? So we say those are the couplings at the very microscopic level, like our theory of everything has those parameters, right? So that's our fundamentalizing model. Then what we did is we integrate out the even spins and we end up with a model with some new couplings. So these are what we are called renormalized couplings. In this case, we would say these are renormalized couplings after one RG step. And let's break down the RG step. Let me emphasize that the RG step has two components. The first component, the second component you almost don't see. We do it automatically without thinking, but it is there. The first component is we integrate out the even spin. After we integrate out the even spin, there's no even spin. So the model we get as SI, S1, S3, S5, S7, S9, and so on, right? And of course, because you integrate out, if you have your screen with a bunch of spins, you integrate out the even ones, now the spacing is bigger, right? And if you integrate out half of a gain, the spacing is bigger. At some point, the monitor only has one spin, all right? So what you should do is you integrate things out and you rescale so that you reset what's your unit, your fundamental unit. So you integrate things out. This was one for you. You integrate out, and the only thing you do is you relabel things. You say S1 is S1, S3 is S2, S5 is S3, S7 is S4. You just re-shrink things so that you can compare. Right? Now, in your new model, you define again that my distance between the spins is what I call 1. That's my distance. That's my fundamental distance. Right? And then you have two models on the same screen, right? Bottom and top part of the screen, the same spins with the same spacing, right? But one has couplings J, H, and the other has couplings J prime, H prime. Okay, now it makes sense to compare. You have it looks the same, but with different couplings, right? But if you don't rescale, it's like you are not comparing things that deserve to be compared, okay? So I just want to emphasize that there are these two steps. There is a step of integrating degrees of freedom out, getting rid of things that you don't see. It's like you don't have a microscope that's powerful enough to see this distance. Your microscope can only see this distance, so you have to integrate this out because you don't have way to access it. And then there is a second step, which is after you integrate out, your new unit, your new fundamental unit, your new cutoff, we say, changes. So you have to rescale things so that you can compare. Okay? So this one, which is A, it's also called the lattice spacing, or we also call it the cutoff, the minimal distance where our microscope can go. Now, we could then continue. So this J prime and H prime was not random. We could compute it explicitly. And here was the expression, right? So by the way, let me tell you, we derive this kind of relations in various ways. Let me tell you yet another way of deriving these relations here in a very simple way. Which is, how would we go about deriving these relations? We would have this transfer matrix T, right? That whenever you want to construct this, you just multiply several T's that take into account the summation over the spins, right? So summing over the spins is multiplying matrices T. t times t times t times t. Each time you multiply, you do an extra summation over the spins. So if you start with t, t has some coupling, j and h, and you multiply with another t, which has coupling, j and h, right? Now you did the sum over the middle spin because you multiply the two t's. So this is just some normalization times t of the coupling j prime h prime. So you just need to multiply the 2x2 matrix that we wrote last time, look at the matrix you obtain, and you read off j prime and h prime from the components of the new matrix. Right? So that's another way of how you would go about finding these guys. Right? And then if you multiply two of these guys, you get j prime prime, h prime prime, and so on and so forth. So each time you combine two t's, you get a t with effective couplings. Okay, so that's a parenthesis. It's another way of deriving it. It's equivalent to what we did last time. And here is these couplings, right? And we saw that we could go on. We could say, I integrate out now the even ones in the new chain, I continue, and eventually I go to what's called a fixed point when things don't move anymore. So eventually things don't move. This is a fixed point. And we say, moreover, that it's an infrared fixed point. We integrate out things, we go to large distances. So we start with UV, and we go to an infrared fixed point with infrared couplings. And we say that the couplings flow. They start from a value, and they go, 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 go. So we describe this thing, that the couplings start changing and so on. We say this is a flow. And we call it renormalization group flow. Okay? Group is a bad name because we integrate things out. We lose details, so we cannot go back. Okay? But historically, people came up with this name, so we use it. It's not a group. There's no inverse. It's pretty much the opposite of group, right? Okay, fine. Okay. Now, now amusingly, it's a curiosity because this model is so simple that we can solve things exactly. We could actually find out what this fixed point is. And what the fixed point is, it's just j equals 0, and h we could also find. Let's just first check once more that j equals 0 is a fixed point. Because if I put j equals 0, here I get cosh over cosh. Cosh is even, so this is 1. So I get 1, log of 1 is 0, 0 equals 0. Good. And if I put j equals 0 here, I get cosh squared divided by cosh squared is 1. So this log is 0, and I get h equals h. Okay, so it's good. J equals 0 is a fixed point for any h. But what is h star? We could actually compute. Because what is h star? At each step of the renormalization group, that is, I have a super microscope, I have a not so good microscope, I have a crappy microscope, I'm blind, right? I can measure the magnetization. Right? And it doesn't matter, the result better be the same. Right? So indeed, the magnetization, which is just the average of the expectation value of the spins, in other words, it is just the average of one spin, any spin, so you can say the first one or anyone, the one that you don't touch when you integrate out things, that cannot change depending on our capacity of viewing or not viewing the other spins. And so we could compute it, and this would be a computation, microscopic computation. If I have the best microscope possible, I get the result in terms of the bare parameters. And if I, but then this should be independent, and that's a nice check. You can check that this quantity is invariant if I replace j and h by h prime j prime. Each time I renormalize, it's the same because it should be. And so in particular, if I go all the way to the end of the flow, j is 0, this term is 0, and I get tangent of h star. And therefore, tangent of h star is given by this function of the microscopic parameter. Okay? That's where we go. Okay, so here's the picture of the RG flow. I start, I go, 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 and I go to some effective thing. So what do I see? I see that in practice, I start with the spin chain model, but after I renormalize a few times, the coupling between the spins is basically irrelevant, and I have some effective coupling. So I flow to some paramagnetic phase where there is no coupling between spins, and I just have some effective decoupled spins with some effective magnetic field. Okay? Good. This would say it's a stable IR fixed point. And here we would say it's an unstable UV fixed point. Right? This point here, remember, corresponds to J equal to infinity. In other words, T equal to zero. So if you could go to T equals zero, which you can never do, you can cool, but it's never going to be exactly zero. Then you would be there, but because you cannot cool infinitely, you are always a little bit away and you always will flow. So it's unstable. Okay, good. So today we move to paths, and let me just remind you of some motivation, although we don't need motivation to study random walks, because random walks are nice by themselves, but one motivation came from Ising models, the same Ising models that we are studying there. In any dimension, I can write like this, right? V is tangent of J, right? This V is just tangent of J. But then, if I open up this bracket, I can do explicitly the sum over spins, because the sum over spins is very easy to do, right? The rules for summing over spins of a polynomial of spin is very easy. The sum over Si to the n is either 1 or 0, depending if n is odd or even, right? Even or odd, right? If it's 1 if it's even, it's 0 if it's odd, right? And so when I open up this parenthesis, if some Si appears an odd number of times, 0. If it appears an even number of times, 1. And so when I open up the parentheses, if I associate an empty link to 1 and the full link to V, then I see that I must put sticks, which are connections, and they cannot have open ends. And so I end up immediately with a summation over all possible ways of distributing sticks. And the weight is 1 if there are no open ends. That's it. Right? And if there are open ends, it's 0. And this almost looks like a partition function for closed loops, because this looks like a loop, right? I do a random walk, and I go back to my same position, right? There was a subtlety, like we said, because paths like this, that cross, naively, you would say that this could be a bunch of things. It could be two loops that are barely touching. It could be one loop that passes by each other. It could be one loop that avoids each other. So there, it looks like I don't want to count this with 1. I want to count this with 3. Like two loops, one loop that does an H shape, or a loop that does like this without touching, right? So if I just write this, it looks like this guy would come with a different weight. But we said that we can get rid of it if we take into account orientations. So when we will, with orientations, this 3 becomes 1 plus 1 minus 1, and it gives 1, and it's all good. Okay? But for that, we need to deal first with paths, and then with paths with orientation. And so we start with random paths today. Okay? Okay, good. So today, we introduced random walks. Okay. And our goal in today's lecture is to understand what's the probability, if I do a random walk for a time t, of starting from the origin and going to position r. So we want to learn how to compute such things. I start from the origin. I have, after some time t, I want to know what's the probability that I am at some distance r. That's one thing we want to learn, how to deal with such problems. And the second thing we want to learn is how to understand walks from an RG point of view. Okay, very good. Everything we say today is based on the first chapter of the second reference that I gave. Okay, so it's very nicely explained there. Actually, not everything. Everything related to RG. The stuff related to PN, you can find there, and also in Itzik's and Drew. Okay, so good references for random walks are the second reference. Second reference is always a good reference. It's a nice reference. Second reference, chapter 1, mostly for the RG. This is mostly for the RG part. And for example, Itzik's and Drew for many nice computations of PN, etc. Okay. There are many ways of addressing this problem. We are going to solve this problem in a few ways. In the tutorial, we are going to solve it in more ways. Okay? So there are various ways. Okay. Good. So let's, and we will do these two things at the same time. Okay, so here is what I mean by the NRGP. Let's be more precise about random walks and say that a random walk is the following. Let's say that this T here, let T be discrete, 0, 1, 2. So we have steps. So let's not do a random continuous walk, but let's do steps. So we start and we do one step and then another 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 step. So this is a step of our random walk. And this step goes with some in some direction r with some probability small r at each step. Okay, and then this could be a sequence of n steps, small n. Small n could be 2, could be 10. Okay, let's suppose we have small n. And then after small n, we keep track of where we are. And now let's do n more. So we continue doing n more. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 6, and now we are here. This is n more steps. And now let's do n more. And now we are here, right? And let's say that we continue. Okay, so that's the path. And this, if this is my definition, my starting point, this is like my UV definition. It's my analog of my starting point, where I start with some bare couplings. There it would be I start with a bare probability distribution that tells me at the very microscopic level what's the probability of doing jumps. So that starting probability would be the analog, the starting probability here is the analog of my bare couplings J and H. It's my starting point, okay? But then what I'm going to do is say I collect n steps. I collect n steps and I say I don't have enough resolution. I don't have a microscope that's powerful enough to see all these small steps. So I can only check my particle every n steps. So I go and I say that I go, let me, and I will go to this path here where I just keep track of where things are. So let me copy this path here. So I go here, then here, then here. So I ignore all these details here, and now I have this effective path, right? Do you agree? Now, notice that, again, I had some original scale, this probability that there was a typical length scale, and now I renormalized, and it becomes bigger, right? So that's the, like step one. So from here to here is like a half step, a half of RG. It's the analog of integrating out. So this step is the analog in the previous example of integrating out the even spins. Right? We get rid of the even spins. It's the analog of this step over here. Next, we want to do this step, which is rescale thing, so that we can compare original and final one. So then, we go on and we say, I rescale. So that's the other half of the RG step to be able to compare. And now, after we rescale, the path becomes like this. So that the typical fundamental length scale, if this would be my one, now this has some typical length scale, one. And now I would have this new walk. So these are the three steps that I have, but this walk would continue, right? So it would have more steps. So the ones we drew are just the first three. Let me draw the first three a little bit darker, right? But again, this is because after I integrate out, this is what I see in my screen, my computer, right? Because then I rescale, now I see more path, right? So let's see, so we see more. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And now this path, you see, after I rescale, this path and that path, they don't look that different. Perhaps they have the same type of properties, right? Now this path would have here some effective probability prime of giving a step R, right? And this is the analog before of my J prime H prime, right? Of this J prime H prime. And then if we will do it a bunch of times, we end up with some path. I want to move this. Where I have some fixed probability of giving some step, and this would be the analog of my J star H star, which is my fixed point. And you see that perhaps this path, from the naked eye, this path and this path, they look more or less the same type of probability. So this would be what a fixed point would look like. Okay? But as we will see, sometimes you flow to a path and the paths, you start with some path and you end up with a path that looks very similar. Sometimes the paths at the end of the RG flow look very different from the paths we started with. And we are going to see this now. Okay? So you see that there is a close analogy between this way, zoom out, get effective parameters. In this language is zoom out, get effective probabilities. And that language, zoom out and start getting effective couplings. It's exactly the same thing. And if you converge towards some effective probability distribution, it's like they're converging towards some effective couplings that describe the large distances. Okay? Okay, good. So that's the motivation and RG picture. And now let's try to do some computations. And let's before give some examples of some starting points, some starting probabilities. So let's give some examples. So examples. So this starting probability R could be, for example, one example could be that the particle is moving in a lattice like there, in a cubic lattice, and it can go to any neighbor. So if it's a d-dimensional lattice, how many neighbors are there? D-dimensional lattice, how many neighbors are there?
2D,
right? If I have in one dimension, I have two neighbors, two dimensions, I have four neighbors, and so on. So the probability of jumping to any of them, if it's equal, it would be 1 over 2D, right? So that's the probability, if I jump to any of the neighbors, right? In 2D, and say zero otherwise. That's a normalized probability. That's an example. Okay. That's what it would be if I were to start moving in, if I move in a lattice. Start moving here. Trying to draw a 3D picture. I'm not sure if it's working. Okay. There's a lattice. So I move here in the plane. Now I'm going off the plane, and so on. Okay? So that would be an example of a random walk. Right? Now, you see that already in this example, you see something. You see that you start with this walk, and clearly, after a few steps, if you break it down, say like this, after RG, you end up with a walk like this. So you could start with a walk that is just up, down, and so on, but after RG, now you go diagonally, right? So clearly, those are not fixed points. You start with those, and you end up going to something else, right? And then you would go on. Another possibility is to say that, for example, another possibility would say that I always jump some size A, right? So I always jump some size A, there is some step A in with equal probability. So here 1 over the area, that depends on how many dimensions we are. So if it was 2 dimensions, it would be something like this. Right? That's just saying that there is an equal probability of jumping in any direction by size A. Right? So I do a size of step A in any direction. Right? Always size A, but I go in any random direction. Another possibility would be a Gaussian. For example, it would be e to the minus r minus some r0 square divided by 2 sigma 0 square times some normalization so that the integral of this probability is 1. Okay? So that would be a Gaussian distribution. Now, what's special with this distribution compared to the other two, the way I wrote? This distribution has something very special compared to the other two.
The step size is not fixed.
The step size is not fixed. So in a sense, the step size is related to this sigma zero, in the sense that if I compute what's the expectation value of the size, if I compute the average of r is related to this sigma zero. But it's true that with this distribution, I can give steps of arbitrary size, but they become less likely when they are big, right? And there is an average size. So there's still an average size, but it's not fixed. That's one difference. But there is another one that's even more important.
There is a drift.
There is what's called a drift or a bias, which is that the average, it's more likely to go in some direction R0. Okay? So in this probability, this R0 is what we call a bias. In other words, it's like wind. Like I have a random walk, but there is some wind. There is some drift. The particle wants to go in this direction. And in this case, the expectation value of R under this probability is precisely this R0. And this is not zero. Okay? So it's slightly more likely, the average, you are likely to go in that direction R0. Okay? Whereas in all these cases here, the average of R in a given step is equal to zero, right? It's equally likely to go to the left or to the right. Okay, so here we say this is a biased, a walk that starts here is called a biased walk. And here, these walks are unbiased. Okay? Good. Okay. So then, now we are ready for studying. We started some probability, some of this, and we ask what's the probability after t steps of being at some distance r from the origin. Okay, we start from the origin now. And we are going to take t, the number of steps, t, to be large. Okay? So you have in your mind, for example, t equal 20. It will be very big, like 20 steps. Like 20 steps, join. Or 20 more steps, join. Right? So that it's something, we don't need to do 2 steps at a time. Right? It's really like a particle of dust in the middle of the wind. We are not going to do 2 at a time. We do a bunch of them, like 20 steps, and then we measure the particle again. Okay? So let's take t to be some big number. And then we want to ask, what's the probability after 20 steps of being at position I? Right? Okay, so what is this? Okay, so I know the probability for each step. So I have to say that it's equal to the integral. I do one step, dx1, over, I integrate over d dimensions, dxt over d dimensions, right? And I have a probability of jumping first some distance x1, then I jump some distance x2, and so on, probability of the last step, some distance xt, right? And these distances must be times a delta function that says that these distances, x1 plus dot 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 plus xt, must be equal to I. Right? So it's the probability that in the first step I do x1, then x2, then x3, then x4, provided they add up to R, I have to take to multiply this probability. Okay. But now, things simplify because these probabilities are independent. The probability of jumping x3 at position at step number 3 doesn't care about 1 or 2, so things should factorize. And indeed, they do nicely. It's enough to use the fact that when I have a delta function, delta of whatever, this whatever is a vector, it's equal to the integral d dk exponential of I whatever dot k. Right? Maybe to be precise, there's probably some 2 pi to this. And once we use this on that delta function, what do we see? We see that we get exponential of k dotted with all that. But you see that k dot x1, k dot x2, k dot x3, k dot x4, k dot xt, and at the end, k dot r with minus sign. Right? And so we get that the probability after t steps of being at position r is equal, let's put this integral first, integral d dk over 2 pi to the d, exponential of minus I k dot r, right? And then we get k dot x1 integral in x1, k dot x2 integral in x2, k dot x3 integral in x3. And these integrals just factorize all of them. Do you agree? And they're all the same. X1, x2, x3 are all dummy variables. So we can just write a single one to the power n, to the power t, the number of integrals. And that single one is just integral d dx, step x, probability of x, e to the I kx. In other words, it's the Fourier transform of my probability distribution raised to the power t. Okay. Now, this object, this Fourier transform, of my probability distribution is a nice object that measures what are called the moments of the distribution. Okay, so let me remind you in case, or tell you about that. Okay. But everyone is happy so far? Everyone is okay with this? Any question here with this identity, delta function, with the argument for that? Is everything okay?
Okay, so now this object here, right? If we call this, let's call this object here f of k. It's a function of k, we integrate over x, it's a function of k. Then this full thing, well, by definition, is just exponential of t times logarithm of f of k, right? If what's inside is f, that's just f. And this log of f of k is given by the moments of the probability distribution, as we are now going to see. So let's work out what this log of f is. Well, it's easy. If I just expand in small x, what we have here is an integral of the probability distribution of this. So this is also equal to just the expectation value of e to the I kx in the probability distribution, right? And therefore, this is equal to the expectation value of 1, if I expand, plus ik times expectation value of x minus k mu k nu over 2 factorial expectation value of x mu x nu plus dot dot dot. Right? Just expand. And you see that this is 1, right? This is 1. This is our bias. This is just our bias, R0. If there is a bias, typically it's 0. If the probability distribution is equal of going to the left and to the right, often we'll consider it to be 0. But if it's not 0, then this would be what we'll call the bias. And this is the expectation value of x squared, x mu, okay? And therefore, for example, here, when we take the log, this result is equal to exponential. Let's take the log of this expression and reorganize. So what do I need so that when I expand this, I get this? Well, the first term is just this, I k mu expectation value of x mu, and that's what's called the first moment. Now the second term I would have plus k nu times an object here, which would be, or maybe minus, that would be the expectation value of x mu, x nu, right? But if I have in the exponent, if I just put this in the exponent, this term would also contribute to x squared, but it's not here, right? You agree? This term, when I expand, I don't see the product of two averages down here, because it's not, it's just average of exponential, not exponential of average. And therefore, I have to subtract it here, minus x mu, x nu delta mu nu plus dot 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 plus the next term would be order k cube, and this thing here, which is the expectation value of x squared once I subtract the average, it's a nice quantity. You see that if there is no bias, it's the same, right? The subtracting average or not is the same because the average is zero. But when there is a bias, it's a nicer quantity than just expectation value of x squared. In fact, this quantity is nothing but the expectation value, you see, of x mu minus the mean value of x mu times x nu minus the mean value of x nu. Right? So it's like the fluctuations over its mean value. Right? This, if you expand, you get immediately this. Why there is delta mu nu? There's no delta mu nu. Sorry. Silly. Yes.
How did you just subtract it? Why didn't you add I mean, how can you just subtract this term? I didn't get it.
So I just took the log of this expression, and log of this term here, once I expand to second order, gives me this. Or said differently, I wrote what I need to write such that when I expand in K, I go from this to this because this is correct. Right? And when I expand from here to here, linear term works, of course, right? Exponential of whatever starts with one, subleading term is this, and then I bring this down and I get this, but I also take the square of this. And then, as I did hopefully correctly, this square cancels and I get just this, which is the correct result. It must be designed such that this exists. Okay? So this is the first moment, and this is just R0 mu, and this is the second moment. And that's, this is the definition of sigma square delta mu nu, assuming the distribution is isotropic.
So that expansion, you've rewritten it as an exponential of something.
Yes.
And but you haven't proven that that is actually equal to all orders, right? But is it obvious? Or?
Well, here I wrote plus order kq.
Okay, I see.
Right? But the claim is that the terms here are the higher moments. Okay? So higher moments are things like this, where I subtract average and I get expectation value of x minus average cube and so on. Okay? So these are the higher moments. Now, and therefore, what we get let me make one more comment before. Yeah. So a small comment, but important one that is going to be used in a second, is that the Fourier transform of a Gaussian. What is a Fourier transform of a Gaussian? It's another Gaussian, right? Fourier transform of a Gaussian is another Gaussian. Right? And therefore, the expectation value of this guy, this is a Gaussian, right? I just have a Gaussian. It's again exponential of k square plus some linear term in k. So for a Gaussian, there's no k cube in the exponent, right? I compute this integral. It's an integral of a Gaussian. Fourier transform of a Gaussian, I get another Gaussian in K, so there's no K cube upstairs or K to the 4 or something like that. And therefore, for a Gaussian, that's the definition of a Gaussian, it's a distribution where all higher moments are equal to 0. So we have first moment, second moment, and all other moments are 0. Okay, so the expectation values of X to the 4, X to the 6, X to the 8 are trivially related to the lower ones in a way that the moments are 0. That's what characterizes a Gaussian distribution. Okay? Another comment is that, this R0 people also call moment 1, and then that second moment would be C2. And then this statement would be that the Cn, where n is bigger than 2, would be equal to 0 for Gaussian distributions. Okay, so that's a small parenthesis that we open here, and we close here. Or we closed and open. Now let's go on with our computation. So we did this small step, and now we go on. So we are here. So let's continue with this probability. So let's continue. So probability after t steps of being at position r, what is it? It's equal to the integral dk over 2 pi to the d. exponential of minus I k r. And then there is this second term here that gives, let me write here, plus t and then I k dot expectation value of x. Okay, let me write I k dot r zero minus k mu k nu, the second momenta c2 mu nu plus order k cube. Where, I remind you, this t is large. This is like 20 or 100 or something like that. And so you see that when t is large, you get a term, you get this is suppressed. It's either very oscillating or very suppressed, right? So when t is large, what k dominates? Do you want k? Yeah, what k dominate? K very large, k order 1, or k very small? When t is large.
K very small,
right? So when t is large, this, the integral is dominated by k. In fact, let's say we want this, let's look at this term, say r0 is 0, for example. Then k should be of order 1 over square root of t, which is very small. But definitely, if k is of order 1 over square root of t, this term times this is finite, then it's okay. But then it's dominated by k very small, which implies that this order k cube can be dropped. So I can stay with these two terms because k is very small and I can drop the k cube. Right? And therefore, I just get this integral here, but this is a Gaussian. It's just quadratic integral in k. Right? I just stop here, now it's quadratic in k, I do the integral. Right? It's Gaussian, we do it. Okay, so let's do it. The result is that this is equal to, let me go back. So this is C2 mu nu. Let me put a zero here. Oops. Okay. I put a zero here to indicate it's the it's my starting point, my bare variance. And then the result we get in terms of that constant is just a Gaussian, because it's the Fourier transform of a Gaussian. So there is just some normalization that's not very important. 2 pi n sigma 0 to the d over 2, that's just so that the integral of a Gaussian is well normalized. And then the important result is exponential of minus 1 half r minus n r0 square over n sigma 0 square. Okay. So that's the key result that we should put in a box. That's the probability distribution we got after some steps.
N is t.
N is t. N is t. Okay. Now, let's see what we have. So this is very interesting. Because you see what happens. We start with some distribution. Which one? It can be any of the ones we started with. It can be anything. You can start with your favorite probability distribution, right? And then coarse grain, like 20 steps, and you end up with a Gaussian, right? Now you start with a Gaussian, coarse grain 20 steps, you continue with a Gaussian. So Gaussian is a fixed point. So all distributions go to the Gaussian. Okay? So this is another way of phrasing what you might know as the law of large numbers. It's the statement that everyone goes to the Gaussian. Okay. So the Gaussian is a fixed point. Right? So we could start with any distribution, like one where I have some probability 1 over 2D, and I coarse grain, and I get some probability that looks continuous, where at each step, now I have a Gaussian. So you start in your spin chain model with some probability. It could be just nearest neighbors. You zoom out, and now it looks like I have a Gaussian moving in any possible direction. Okay? Doesn't matter what you start. You could start with 1 over 2D. Maybe you can have nearest neighbors and next to nearest neighbors. Maybe it can be probability of jumping, which is uniform probability for any distance. Or maybe uniform distribution for distance A and B, two possible steps, but not more, whatever. Do 20 steps of coarse graining, go to a Gaussian. Okay? Yeah.
How do you see that it's the only fixed point?
Because we computed.
Oh.
What was the assumption, you could ask? What was the underlying assumptions? Could there be other fixed points? Indeed. For example, we assume the moments are finite. So that's a secret assumption. Okay? And you could ask, are there other types of fixed points which are weirder if I start with crazier probability distributions? And indeed there are. For example, if the moments are not finite, there are so-called Levy steps, Levy walks, that are the kind of random, relevant ones for the stock market, where you have a random walk and then some big steps. So for example, those are also fixed points, and they are not of this type. But then there was an assumption here, which is that this function f makes sense, that the moments are finite. Okay? So the assumption here was start with a bare probability with finite momenta, finite moments, and you end up with a Gaussian under the RG flow. Okay, but let's be more careful, because we said that the RG flow has two steps, and here we did one. Here we took n steps and we joined n steps, right? So here we are doing the analog right now. We are doing the analog of this. We have some small probability for each step, and we are asking what's the probability of going from this distance r after one step. And we get some probability. But now what we want to do is to take this probability and rescale it such that the fundamental step is the same as it started with. Okay? Do you agree? So now let's see. So here we start with some probability that at some sigma zero square, which is a measure of my expectation value of my x square, right? So I start with some size that has some typical expectation value. So here I mean in the connected sense. It's this minus the expectation of x, right? Do you agree? So we start with some model, and we end up with a Gaussian where if I look here, this is my sigma prime square after I renormalize. Right? This sigma prime is the analog of there saying that I start with step one and I have I plus one, and now I got I plus two. So then I need to rescale so that this I plus two is I plus one, so that I go back to spacing one. right? So that Gaussian there, and this variance got shifted, right? So what we want to do is to keep the same variance. So then, what we have to do is we break. So we redefine R. Let's go to R. Let's rescale it by square root of t times R. Okay. So such that, so we rescale, such that the variance sigma square is held fixed. That's like keeping the analog of keeping sigma square equal 1, saying there is an average size which is like 1. Here we leave it unfixed as sigma. It's like fixing our lattice spacing there to be 1, and it's always 1 for us, and that's our unit of mesh. Right? You agree? Otherwise, of course, if you are coarse graining, the steps are becoming bigger, but that's not what you want to do. You want to coarse grain and then rescale such that the fundamental step has the same size so that you can compare. And after you rescale, after this rescaling, then finally, you have the probability after the full RG step. And that's a Gaussian, so there is some normalization, but what's important is the exponent. And now in the exponent, because I rescale, look what happens, it's very important. So here I get the same sigma square, right? Because I rescaled by square root of t, so the square root of t canceled. And here I got my rescaled r minus square root of t times r0 square. When I write r equals square root of t times r prime, right? And so now I have the same variance, right? But this would be what we would say is our renormalized bias. R0, this would be R0 prime. Okay? So we did n steps, and now we end up with a walk that has the same variance, which would be a measure of the step minus the drift. And we would have that after a full step of renormalization, this is what we would get.
Pedro?
Mm-hmm.
Pedro, what if you don't start with a Gaussian probability distribution? How do you compare?
We don't start with Gaussian.
Because this you assume that.
No, I did not assume it's Gaussian. Sorry, maybe.
How do you do this comparison?
Yeah. So let me emphasize that I did not start with Gaussian.
Yeah, but
I start with some distribution.
The RG step you have.
Yes, I agree. You see, this is definition of this quantity. It's not true, it's not the parameter that appears in the Gaussian, it's the second moment. So the second moment is like what's the average expectation value of x squared, right? So you start with some probability, all the probabilities I gave you there have some sigma zero square, you can just compute. Right, you just compute this expectation for those probabilities and they have some sigma zero square. Right, so that sigma zero square fix it to be your one. That's your average size, right? And then after you RG, that changed by some n, but that's then you rescale so that you can compare and you have the same average size, right? You agree? Is it clear to everyone? So we start with some variance, and then we use units after you rescale such that the variance is fixed. It's our choice. We can, of course, just buy a bigger monitor every time, and then we don't need to rescale. But if we want to compare things in the same monitor, we better have steps, have the same unit all the time. Okay. So let's then make a few comments, because there are many interesting comments here, but I should not write here, right? So the first comment is universality. This is a striking example of universality. Doesn't matter what we start, we go to the Gaussian. So, I mean, there's probably no stronger example of this idea that microscopic details don't matter. You can start with random uniform probability in any step A, uniform probability of A and B, but zero otherwise, discrete steps, whatever, and you go. You can start with many probability distributions. And you all flow to the Gaussian fixed point. Right? So if you start with probabilities that have the same initial variance and bias, then you go to the same Gaussian fixed point. Right? So these are different bare probabilities that you start with the same sigma square, which is the second moment, and the same R0, which is the first moment. Right? But different C3, C4, C5, etc. Right? All these probabilities, each one has its own C3, C5, all these higher moments. The expectation value of x cube, x to the 4, x to the 5, they're all different. Right? And what happens is that provided these two guys are the same, the other ones don't matter. The other ones, you just flow to the Gaussian fixed point with, which has C3 equals C4 equals it. Okay? So we say that if we think that this is our C2, this is our C1, we say that this, if we think of this as couplings, we say these are irrelevant couplings. Yes, you can turn them on, but at large distance they don't matter. They are irrelevant in the strict sense of the word. They don't matter. You flow to the Gaussian, which has C3 equal to 0. So you turn on a little bit of C3, and under the RG, it disappears. Okay? So the RG washes out irrelevant operators. So these are irrelevant couplings that disappear under the RG flow. Okay? And these things, these ones matter, and we would say these ones are relevant couplings. Okay? And we would see how many relevant couplings there are? Two. How many irrelevant? Infinite. Okay? And that's the power of universality, is the fact that yes, you can write an infinite amount of microscopic probability distributions, but in the end, two parameters matter. So in the end, to describe large distances, you don't care about all those microscopic details, right? So that's the very important idea of universality.
I'm confused about something. Suppose you have two Gaussian weight packets. Then the set of points has an extra contribution, right?
No. That's wrong. That's just wrong.
Why?
If you want to say it has an extra contribution, you should show that it has an extra contribution. I should not show that. Things don't have extra contributions. Your statement is wrong. It's like 1 over 2D for each step. You can say it's there are 2D Gaussians, one around each of those points. What's the big difference, right? Imagine I start instead of 1 over 2D for each of these points, I put a small Gaussian around each of those points. Right? Those four things converge to a single Gaussian as I zoom out.
I two packets that are separated with different bias. I have a Gaussian probability of being around the origin and then a Gaussian probability of doing a big step.
Again, if you have finite moments.
That's what you have finite moments, right? Since
the thing is that is not an isotropic probability distribution. And we assume the isotropy as well.
No, I can make it isotropic if
you want. No, you can make it isotropic. I think, but you have to be careful that when you multiply many of them, it's not like only take one Gaussian or only take the other. All of them matter, right?
Yeah.
So in the end, it is just some effective probability distribution. So let's discuss the geometrical picture of the fixed points, and perhaps we can come back to your question, because as we will see in the geometrical picture, it's natural to expect that there could be other fixed points when you have big jumps. Okay. But let me come back to this picture in a second. But let's think more about this fixed point and about these relevant couplings. And right. Right. So here, however, what we are seeing is that this renormalized bias R0 prime is square root of T times R0, right? So if you start with the bias increases under RG, right? We start with some bias and we multiply it by square root of T. So the picture we seem to have is the following, is that if I start without Gauss, without bias, if this is R0, if I start without bias, then this is here the Gaussian without bias, and that's a fixed point in the sense that if this direction is R0, this direction, let it be C3, for example, all the other C's, indeed, I start with any distribution and I go there. Right, I start with any distribution, and under the RG, I end up with a Gaussian with no C3, no nothing. But if I start with some bias, I end up flowing towards the case of R0 equal to infinity, of infinitely many bias. Right? And so this is another fixed point with R0 equal to infinity. And so we say that here, if I think that this is like C3, C4, this point is stable with respect to all these perturbations, adding a bit of C3, a bit of C4, it's stable. But if I add a bit of bias, then it's unstable. Right? I add a bit of bias, I flow away. So there is a key difference that it's a Gaussian fixed point, right? And it's stable, this guy has many stable directions, so it's stable with respect to all the Cn's that are C3, C4, and so on, but it's unstable with respect to R0, which is our C1, in the sense that if I turn some R0 under this Rg, I flow to R0 very big, right? And now, this geometrically, it's very clear, and it's very nice to see. So let's draw a picture. Let's simulate a random walk with or without a small bias. Okay? So if I start simulating a random walk, so here is a random walk, right? I'm doing it randomly. But if there is a small bias, then it means that although when I, on average, it looks random, eventually I see that I do have a preference and I do tend to go a little bit in one direction more than the other, right? I can go in all directions, but eventually I drift to that direction, right? So this would be a random walk with some bias. And now let's do the RG. Let's say I go here and I connect. Where did I start? I didn't see. Ah, here. I connect this step to say this step to this step to this step to this step to this step. Perhaps to this step to this step to this step to this step and so on. Right? You agree? And then after this, I get this path that after I rescale, it looks like this. Right? After I rescale, after RG, this is the path I got, right? And you see that the bias became much more visible, right? Because we ignored the details, right? So after I rescale such that the typical size is still one of the step, when I subtract the bias, right? Now the bias became bigger. And now if I do another one, like you see, you go like this, you go like this, after IRG, now really it looks almost, sorry. And then if I rescale to B1, I would start getting a path like this. Right? So if I start with any bias, if I zoom out a lot, it looks like a straight line, right? And that's logical, right? That's what we see when there is wind and we see from very far away, we see some smoke moving like a line. But if I'm super close and I cannot even tell where the wind, in which direction the wind goes, it looks like it's random in all directions, right? It's only when you go to an helicopter and you go far away, then you see that it's drifting to the right or to the left, right? So indeed, it makes sense that here I have no idea of R0. It looks like I'm in the middle of the smoke, and if I just look there, I just see a particle moving a bit. It's hard to tell what the bias is. And here, in the IR, there is a clear bias, and I went from a random walk to some ballistic motion where I just go in a straight line. Right? So very different when there is this. So let's write a formula that encapsulates this idea, that encapsulates that when I am at short, I have no idea. But then when I am at large distance, there is a clear bias. Let's write a formula that encodes these two stars at the same time. So to do it, let's compute the average size of a walk after t steps. So let's compute the expectation value of R, the expectation value of R after t steps. By this I mean square root of, I define like this. Let me define R after t steps as the expectation value of the sum xi, right, square. I go one up to t, right? See, this is a good definition, even if there is no bias, because I'm summing the average square, I have an estimate of the typical size, right? Even if there is no bias. Okay. Now you open up this square, right? And you know that expectation value of x and x are related to the second moment. If it's xi square, it's related to the second moment. If it's xi times xj, it's two first moments. So you do the algebra and you get, I'll let you clean this up, but the computation is very simple. And the result you get is square root of t times sigma square plus t square times r0 square. Okay? So that's a simple result of just expanding and using the definition of sigma and r0. And now this formula is very interesting because it tells us a lot. Okay? So let's see, what is this formula telling us? It's telling us that if t is huge, then this term dominates over this, right? It's t squared. So this formula goes, when t goes to infinity, so at really large distances, it goes like t times r0, if there is r0. So if there is r0, even if it's a very small bias, even if the bias is very small, if it's there, at large t, it will eventually dominate. And then it means that eventually, after t steps, you will see a linear growth of r, right? But that's what we see in this picture. Eventually, it's just growing linearly It's proportional to t. It's just growing linearly with time. That's what we expect, indeed. Right? On the other hand, if we take, on the other hand, if we say that t is very large, but we say that this is very small, so t is very large, but still this term is much smaller than this, but still t times c sigma square is much bigger than t square times r0 square, right? So that the bias is very small, so that even if t is very big, it's very small bias, so this term is small, then this behaves as square root of t times sigma, right? And therefore, this is the behavior of a random walk, where the average size grows like square root of the number of steps. That's if you want the definition, right? When there is no bias, this is also an exact result. When there is no bias, here we see that r goes like square root of t. So that's the result without bias. And so what do we see? We see that when we are here and we are studying some average size, indeed, this here behaves as square root of t, right? So I'm in the middle of the smoke. There is a fire, there's smoke, right? And I follow the particle and it's growing with square root of t. But then it transitions, right? So I start as square root of t, right? And that's what I see in the UV. But then eventually it transitions into linear in t, and that's what I get in the IR. Right? So when I have like 100 steps, but the shift, but the bias is much smaller, then it looks like it's a random walk. I don't see the bias yet. Because in the UV, this bias is not important. But then as I go to the infrared, then the other term takes over, and then it grows linearly with the distance. And so we have this fixed point, which is the Gaussian fixed point. And there are two types of perturbations of the Gaussian fixed point, to summarize. So if I think that I have my Gaussian fixed point here, we say that there are two types of perturbations of it. If I change the Gaussian fixed point by deforming a bit my probability distribution, by changing a bit the third moment or the fourth moment, I deform the probability distribution, nothing happens. I zoom out and it's the same thing. But if I change my beautiful Gaussian by giving it some small bias, by saying goes by opening a window, now the random walk changes completely. Now there is some wind and the particles just end up growing, going linearly at very large distance. Now, from this picture, we could also see what could be other types of fixed points. Because suppose you have a random walk, and it could even be a random walk like this. Let's use a different color. Now suppose we have a random walk where there is some bias. So this is the random walk. Here is some bias. But then, eventually, at some steps, there is some probability of giving a much bigger step. Right? So then, OK, it's true. I have some stupid bias, so it looks like I'm flattening. But then there's some random probability at some point that I do some huge step. Right? And then here starts again the usual random walk with some bias. And then some huge step again. Right? And this would be what would happen with this other type of fixed points that we could work out. Right? So these are different walks. Indeed, as I zoom out, this could be a stable fixed point. It looks the same at all distances. At all distances, it looks like small walks and then jumps. Small walks and then jumps. And those types of walks, they wash out the bias. Right? You can say, I had a small bias. Sure, you can add a small bias. I mean, it doesn't matter. The big steps are the ones that matter in the end. So yeah, you can put a small wind, but that's not going to give the overall effect at large distances. So how would we go about finding those? What equations we would go about solving if we wanted to find all these general probability distributions, right? We would say, well, I want to find a probability distribution that obeys this equation, that I put a probability here, and I get the same probability here. So go and solve these equations. One solution is Gaussian, but there are other solutions. Okay? Those would be these other crazy fixed points that look a little bit like, that could have very different physics. This is, for example, this is what is called a Levy step. Like it's some some kind of huge step. And I believe these guys have a, they don't have a finite x square, indicating that sometimes they give these huge steps. Okay, so it could be some probability distributions that look like more or less like a Gaussian at short distances, but the tail is not Gaussian, but it decays slowly. And they don't have this fixed, they don't have all normalized momenta, so sometimes they do jump a lot. For the most part, they behave like a Gaussian, and then there is a crash in the stock market, and it jumps. And this will be some crazy walks. And those that are walks where you have, now you have like bias is one parameter, and then you have another parameter, and now bias, for example, is an irrelevant operator. You turn on bias, and it flows to the distribution that in practice doesn't have bias.
So yeah. You said that we could sort of find this sort of distribution by demanding that the probability distribution we get after T step is the same as the original step.
But because if we say, if there are other fixed points, right. What does it mean to be at a fixed point? It means that I reach this blue distribution,
right.
That if I coarse grain the blue one 20 times, I get back the blue one, right? Now, when I say it's the same, I don't mean equal sign. I mean, it's the same. You compute the right-hand side. It's the same of the left-hand side after you rescale.
Right.
Because we had to do the rescaling to compare, to say that we are at a fixed point. Because if we just coarse grain, we increase our unit by square root of n. But that's just a triviality, that we just rescale so that our unit is 1. Right? So the equation would be right-hand side equal to left-hand side, where r goes to r times alpha. And you find alpha so that the probabilities work. Okay? So these are, this would be other fixed points. That we would find by imposing again that the probability is equal to the probability after an RG step. So and we would solve this equation. Probability after I rescale is equal to the probability that I get by doing an RG step like that. I impose this equation, and Gaussian is good because we just saw. If I put Gaussian, I get Gaussian, right? There could be other solutions, and there are other solutions. So it's an interesting problem in statistics to find what are called all stable distributions. Okay. So in sum, just I think perhaps we can. I think we'll stop here, and then next time we will. So let's see how much of what I said we were going to do we did. So we understood this RG point of view, how to think of this walks, and we computed what's this probability, right? So the answer is it's a Gaussian. Right? You could ask, it's a Gaussian when t is large, but you could ask if I have, say, a discrete walk where at each step I do 1 over 2d, right? What is it without any approximation? Without approximating t is large, just literally doing after 13 steps, what's the probability, right? And that's a more complicated object. That's what you are going to work out in the tutorial, is playing a little bit more with these probabilities and this jump point of view. Okay. And next time we will start, I will summarize again these probabilities, and we will conclude with a random, with this n. These are what are called unrestricted random walks. Notice that here there is no orientation, right? No orientation at all introduced. And no constraint that the lines cannot cross. Here they can cross, right? There is just probability. We don't care where the walk was before. So we are doing unrestricted and no winding. We don't keep track of orientation, and we don't keep track of whether they cross or not cross. So it's really the simplest possible walks. So the proposal is next time we'll finish with these walks. Then we will see that these walks are related to the Ising model to a Gaussianizing model, so an Ising model where the spins are not plus or minus one, but take any real number from minus infinity to plus infinity. That's what we will do on Wednesday. Today is Monday. Today is Tuesday. So that's what we will do on Thursday. And on Friday, we will discuss some general properties of Gaussian integrals. And then next week, we come back to that discretizing model and to other type of random models. Okay, that's the plan for this week.